The network children ask for by name. The Defenestrate Media Network.
What happens when mixtapes meet memes? This is Gen Zex. Join JM Bell and Braxton Bunnell as they break down the news, music, movies, trends, and moments that shape Gen X and the world Gen Z is creating right now. We're judging the worlds that raised us, from landlines to smartphones. This is Gen Zex. The culture that was versus the culture that's trending.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Gen Zex. It's me, Jeff, and my best buddy, Braxton.
So good to be back.
Hey, it's good to have you back. I had a lot of fun last week, and I have been looking forward to this all fucking week. And we're usually going to drop on Wednesdays, but I think we're going to go ahead and drop this one on Tuesday because JC left town to go do Scottish shit down in southern Utah, and I feel like it's okay if we steal his space for a week, just a week.
Oh, yeah.
So that people get...
Just a week.
Yeah, so that they get what they want. People want the stuff, and we've got the stuff for them.
So, I sure hope the people like the stuff we're bringing.
I've gotten a lot of compliments. I've gotten more compliments on this show than I have on the Left show for years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The only other one that competes with people reaching out to specifically compliment the work is I Told You So.
Hmm.
You know, I get a lot of feedback. I get a lot of feedback on I Told You So as well. So I like it. We're gonna do 10 episodes on theleftshow.com, and then I believe, and I know I said this about I Told You So, and we're like at almost 40 episodes, and I still haven't done it. Break it off to its own website, its own RSS feed, and stuff like that. Let it live on its own. Just throw it out of the nest and let it go. Yeah, because I'm having a good time. But I got to admit, my problem from last week carried over into this week, and I kept on playing fucking BioShock. and it's not my favorite one. I think we talked about it. I think my favorite one to play is Infinity, but it is my favorite of the stories.
Oh yeah. I'm kind of the same way. I really like the first BioShock, but Infinite is just, it's a better experience in so many ways.
Better gameplay.
Oh, yeah. Especially like the DLC. Do you ever play the DLC, the Burial at Sea stuff?
No. There's DLC?
There's three DLCs. So there's Clash in the Clouds, which is like a wave-based thing, where it's just combat.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Burial at Sea, which, if I remember correctly, follows Elizabeth. You play as Elizabeth in an alternate timeline where Elizabeth is in Rapture.
Okay.
So it's back in Rapture, but it's really good. I think if you, it's, the DLCs are always on sale now.
I'm looking on, look at them all. Look at them. Burial at Sea, episode 1, episode 2, Clash in the Clouds, and Columbia's Finest.
Yeah, the Columbia's Finest just adds some weapon skins. They're cool. But yeah, you can get just like the season pass for like relatively cheap now.
$20.
Yeah. Yeah, I think when I bought it, it was on like a Steam sale. It was like $7 for everything.
I can wait for the DLC to go on sale.
Fun. They're really great.
But I had no idea. I haven't looked at the Steam page in a decade. How old is this game? Let's see. It's 2013.
Oh yeah.
So, it's been a minute. It absolutely has been a minute. Okay, so how's your week been? How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. It was a good week. Watched a great movie at your recommendation.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to talking to that. But I have to inform you that you, sir, are going first this week.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
So, if you're ready, by all means, proceed.
So, this week, I wanted to talk about one of my favorite comic series of all time, The Department of Truth. First issue came out in September of 2020. Big notable news there. Everyone was on lockdown.
Yeah.
Pandemic. But Department of Truth is a really, really fascinating story. James Tynion is a genius. I cannot wait to meet him when he'll be at Bolts. But it is so good. It follows an FBI agent who is plucked out of the field and put into the Department of Truth. And they investigate what they call mass belief phenomenon. So many people are believing in something, more often than not a conspiracy theory, that it's becoming true. Like in the first issue, they put Cole on a plane, they take him up, and they show him that the Earth is flat now because so many people believe it.
That's creepy.
Yeah. No, it's really good. Yeah, I highly recommend it. It deals with a lot of themes of, well, obviously, the truth. And I think that's very interesting to look at, especially now in our current political climate.
You mean when there's none to be found?
None to be found. Truth doesn't matter. It's just whatever, you know, Trump says goes, and that's the truth now. And that's very much what the Department of Truth kind of deals with, is when does belief stop being belief and just becomes true?
Well, I believe you could ask the evangelicals that about Trump.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, really, when you think about it, they all think he's the second coming of Jesus Christ, the evangelicals do, and they keep elevating him to it, and they get more and more, I want to say ecclesiastic, but I know that that's not the word I'm looking for. But basically, they want to be shakers. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to be snake charmers. They want to be revivalists that preach hellfire for disobeying a political figure who grabs pussy without permission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, no. I got to be honest with you. I have also read The Department of Truth.
Mm-hmm.
I just the first trade. I'm behind, but I. James Tynion IV is exceptionally talented.
Oh, yeah. Especially the stuff he's doing right now. Exquisite Corpses has been so good.
I haven't read that.
Very basic premise. The 13 most powerful families representing the 13 colonies every, I believe it's 5 years, hold a contest where they cut off a small town from the rest of the world, no communication in or out, and they drop 13 trained killers into that town to fight it out. Whoever wins, whoever's representative wins, gets to control the country for the next 5 years.
Oh, that's fun. Oh,
yeah,
that's fun.
So it's,
sounds completely fucking feasible, too.
Oh, absolutely. But it's James Tynion wrote the first issue, and then after that, it's been him and a different writer every time, and it's going to 13 issues.
See? His rising tide is raising all boats.
Mm-hmm.
Love this guy. Fucking love this guy. I really do. No, I give... my Amazon account is full of receipts for copies of the first... trade paperback for Department of Truth, because I give it as a gift.
It's a fantastic gift book.
Because I do, when people ask about comics, and they do, you know, given both my years at Volts and Nerd Store and being on the comic book show since 2010, I do get asked comic book questions quite often. And one of them, you know, is what do I read? So we go down the rabbit hole of, well, what do you like? because there's a comic book for just about everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so when they don't know what they like, which is what I normally hear, I'll pop off, you know, if they're interested in superheroes, I'll usually grab a Scott Snyder Batman. Court of Owls is always good. You know, something like that, or a Thor Jason Aaron run, you know, when Assad Ribic was painting for him. And I do that.
My go-to recently has been giving people the first trade of Invincible when they're getting into comics.
Okay. Really?
Yeah, just because, A, it's insanely popular right now.
That's true.
So I can guarantee at least one of their friends is talking about it. And B, it's a very fun superhero story that does a lot of the superhero tropes very right.
Yeah.
And it's a good, I like to try and get people not necessarily like away from Marvel and DC, but showing like, hey, there's more stuff than Batman, Superman, Spider-Man.
Okay. I'll give you that. There's not more than Thor though. Thor's the guy.
Oh yeah. No, God of Thunder.
No, I do. I absolutely dig it. Sweet. I don't know. That first one of Invincible, the problem is that I literally watched the animated series before I read the book.
Oh,
is that compared to the animated series, I found the book a little slow. Even Kirkman says it's slow compared to what we did in the series. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, you know what? Taking a step back and just kind of looking at it as a first foray into capes, I think you're right. I think that's a good book.
Yeah, that, or if somebody is into capes but wants something different, I'll give them Powers.
Oh, Powers is great. Powers is fantastic.
But Department of Truth is very important to me because it was the first trade. The first volume was the first trade that I bought when I started working at Volts.
Oh, that's sweet. So it's nostalgic for how much you miss me.
It is, yes. No, yeah, I bought it on, I believe it was your recommendation.
Yeah, I had a feeling you'd like it.
I love it. I am upset that there's a new issue every 3 months. I wish it was back to monthly, but I understand James Tynion has a lot of other genius going on.
He does. And I like the fact that he doesn't work himself to death like a lot of the other writers do, because they end up writing garbage.
Oh, yeah. It's the same. I wouldn't necessarily call it a complaint, but little bitch that I have with Ice Cream Man, my other favorite comic series. We get a new issue maybe once every 4 months, but that issue is always the greatest thing I've ever read, so I don't really mind.
Yeah, it's hard to complain when you get quality. You do.
Especially when they're doing it so they don't burn themselves out.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember Jason Aaron writing Thor and thinking to myself at the time, I think we were on like the 12th or 13th or 14th fucking issue of that when he was writing it. And I knew I was reading something special. And I knew I was being spoiled. One of the other ones I remember that I was trying so hard to enjoy, but kept having to wait for. What was it? It was the DC Marvel Universe meets Watchmen. Doomsday Clock.
Doomsday Clock.
Doomsday Clock. That was supposed to be a spring event that changed the entire DC universe, and the writer and the artist took so long getting the issues out that DC had to make a new spring event and take that out of canon because they couldn't wait the 2.5 years it took them to do 12 issues?
Yeah, it was somewhere around there. And I remember that became an Elseworld now.
Yep.
That's something that's not part of the main DC canon, which really sucks because that could have been a really cool reboot rather than Crisis Event number 37.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. It was, I only read four issues because I just gave up. And in those four issues,
so
yeah, I was excited. I was just like, this is good. This is really good. And then the fifth issue took like 3 months to come out, and the sixth issue took another three, and then the seventh took another four, and then it just was kind of random, but no less than 3 months in between issues and all that. And, you know, it is kind of a separator when you look at Tinian's work and the pace with which he releases it. That's not Big Two. That's not DC Marvel behavior. Those fuckers are like monthly or else.
Oh, yeah.
And when they did, what was it, last summer, they did Long Halloween Part 2.
Oh, yes.
And Matt Fraction was supposed to start the Batman title in September. And again, I was out of the game at this point, but from what I recall, they delayed his starting, and then they're just like, fuck it, put him out. And they were going out at the same time.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't Long Halloween 2. It was Hush 2.
That's right. Hush 2.
Yeah, Hush 2. Last issue of Hush 2, still not out.
Oh, my God.
It's still not out. It's to the point where we've had to explain, or at least I have had to explain to several people at the shop, why there are two Batman titles with two different numbering systems.
I feel you.
Yeah, was that same way with, what was that one? Swamp Thing, Green Hell.
Oh, that one never, third one never came out. Did it ever come out?
It did. It came out.
Oh.
Like 2 years later.
I don't think it had come out when I was still there. I don't think.
Yeah, it's out. It's in hardcover now.
Huh. Yeah, I remember they got a re-release on number two, and I was like, fuck it, I'm done.
Yes.
Because I like Swamp Thing, and those first two were good. I was really looking forward to the third. But yeah, to the best of my memory, it still wasn't out by the time I left in last May.
No, it's out, and for what it's worth, third issue, also really good.
Oh, I'm sure. Who wrote that? I can't remember.
Oh, man.
Was that...
I don't know. I know I was interested in it because it was Swamp Thing and Constantine.
Swamp Thing, Green...
Jeff Lemire.
Green, yeah, Jeff Lemire.
Another fantastic writer who just
takes
has like eight series going at one time.
Takes his sweet-ass time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I do. Well, okay. That was fun. Why don't we take a little break, and then we'll come back on the other side, and I'll pitch you mine, and then you can ask me all of the burning questions you have about growing up in the Cold War.
Yes, I took color-coded notes, so I am excited.
I'm so excited. I cannot wait. So we're going to take a little break. We get back on the other side. Something from the 80s.
In a world where MAGA is banning and burning books, it is a revolutionary act to read. It's Monday in America is a bold collection from the left show's J.M. Bell about politics, family, aging, and the uncomfortable truths we keep avoiding. No talking points, just real life in a divided country. Order your copy of It's Monday in America today for just $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. If you're looking to feel hopeful or inspired, or if you're just frustrated and unsure about where we're headed, this book provides a unique look at the life of a Gen X liberal, the challenges and victories, and the question, what kind of world have we built for our children? It's Monday in America. $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. It's Monday in America. Better to die on your feet than live on your knees.
What if there was one place where comic book fans could get everything? News, reviews, debates, and deep dives every single week.
And not just we read one issue and Googled the rest kind of takes. We're talking 15 years deep, over 600 episodes.
That's right. The world's greatest comic book podcast has been breaking down Marvel, DC, indie books, movies, and fandom culture long before it was cool.
Whether you're a lifelong collector,
a casual fan who just saw the latest superhero movie,
or someone trying to figure out where to even start,
we have got you covered.
We don't always agree, which makes it way more fun.
Yeah, way more fun.
New episodes every Tuesday.
Real opinions, real conversations.
Zero gatekeeping.
Check out the world's greatest comic book podcast at thecomicbookpodcast.com.
Hey kids, comics!
August 10th, 1984. The United States men's Olympic basketball team secured a 96-65 gold medal victory over Spain. Yep. Controversy dominated track and field as Mary Decker and Zola Budd ran into each other in the 3,000-meter race.
That sounds rough.
Oh, yeah, I can't imagine. In El Salvador, President Jose Napoleon Duarte gained congressional support for Reagan's policies in his country. In Iran and the Middle East, the Ayatollah Khomeini criticized the mining of the Red Sea and denied Iranian involvement in some airline hijackings that had happened at the time, which they totally did. They were absolutely doing them. In the UK, there was a miners' strike. Pit closures were under discussion. Police clashes, violence. The Red Hot Chili Peppers released their first album in the week of August 10th, 1984. People Express Airlines, which I doubt you've heard of.
I've not.
Yeah, they launched a price war with low fare, high volume flights to Chicago. And the number one song on the United States charts was Ghostbusters by Ray Parker.
A banger, valid.
But in I'm trying to see if anybody can guess what it is yet, but on August 10th, 1984, the world's first ever PG-13 rated movie was released into theaters. Do you know what that movie was, folks? Red Dawn, Wolverines!
I did not know that that movie was PG-13. If you put a gun to my head, never would have guessed that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We were delicate back in the day.
See, my thing is, and we'll get into it, I thought that this was a little, like, now knowing it's PG-13, especially, it's shocking. A lot of the, like, especially like how quickly it gets into it and how, I wrote down, let's see, paratroopers first seen at 4 minutes, 30 seconds.
Nice.
That movie does not fuck around. It gets right into it. First death at 5 minutes, 26 seconds.
Nice.
When the Russians shoot the school teacher, and then, there's a dead kid in the pan over shot of the window. And I feel like, especially like for that, I don't know. I mean, I can't say especially because I didn't grow up in that time, but seeing like what constitutes like our now.
Yeah.
It feels like it would fit right at home in there.
A little bit. There was a 2012 remake with Chris Hemsworth.
And oh yeah.
They did it with, I believe it was North Koreans.
Oh man, I never.
In some Latin American country. It was weird and it wasn't very good. And it's, I'm not saying Red Dawn was great. What I'm saying is that at the time, you know, it's, I mean, it basically on its surface, it's a group of Colorado high school kids who become guerrilla fighters after the Soviets lead an invasion of the United States, you know, but what it really boils down to was just kind of how Americans viewed how we felt about the world in 1984.
Oh yeah. And that's one of the things I wrote down is like, there are the very present fears of illegal immigration when they're talking about how the Cubans got into, because it's Cubans and Russians.
Yeah.
And how they got into the U.S. through illegal immigrants who, quote unquote, held the door open and let everybody in. And it's so interesting to see how much time is just a flat circle. Because that's just kind of what we're in now.
It really is. And my question on that one is if they're holding open the door, why did they need parachutes?
Yeah, parachutes in a very small town. What is it, Kansas, I think?
No, it's Colorado.
Colorado, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, parachutes into a very small town in Colorado. And then just suddenly there's APCs and tanks and full, like, heavy artillery and all that. It was very interesting to see, like, and this is one of the questions I have, like, for you, like, how real was this fear at the time? Like, was this like something that everybody like thought was a real possibility that there would just suddenly be paratroopers in Colorado?
Yeah. I was 12 when this came out, so I was not allowed to see it. I saw it on VHS a couple of years later. We were still doing, when I was 10, 11, 12, we were still doing nuclear drills where we'd have to crawl under the desk.
Oh, yeah, crawl under the desk, cover your head.
Yeah, because that'll work. Whatever.
It's more of like a thing to feel safe so you don't panic.
Yeah, until you're vaporized.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you won't know.
Into little particles.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, there was, you had the Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union. It was very real. And in 84, Reagan was turning the screws and the temperature was rising. So, mm-hmm. and that started back in 80, especially when he was on the campaign trail running against Jimmy Carter. And he's out there calling the USSR the evil empire.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a new fear of nuclear war. We were all worried about spies. You know, the Red Scare was back. We're all mm-hmm. worried about ideological takeovers. And what Red Dawn did was it tapped right into that fear. And it gives you the nightmare scenario of what if the war comes here. It's geopolitically speaking, you know, we've been the fact that 9/11 is our big terrorist attack, and I think it was in 93 we had another one, a non-domestic terrorist attack where they tried to blow up the World Trade Center from the bottom.
And, oh yeah the first World Trade Center bombing.
Yep I think it was in 93. You know, I mean, this was a paranoia that we have. It was the psychological shift. And for decades, you know, we thought of war as something that happened, you know, over there. Mm-hmm. And that was why Red Dawn worked so well, is because suddenly it was here. And we still haven't had to deal with that unless you count Canadians and the Spanish. And that was a long time ago, both of those.
Oh, yeah.
You know. But the Canadians just came down, lit the White House on fire, had a barbecue, went home. Mm-hmm. I might be paraphrasing a little. I might be, you know, kind of shortening that just a bit. But the thing about the film is, and keep in mind that I love this movie. I'm about to talk shit on it, but I love this movie. I just watched it again a few months ago for no other reason than I wanted to scream Wolverines. But it really leans.
I have a very interesting connection that I'll get to in a bit.
Okay.
About Wolverines in particular.
Oh, nice. So it really leaned heavy into American exceptionalism. The teenage fighters, the Wolverines, they're not trained soldiers, but they represent rugged individualism, self-reliance, and resistance to tyranny.
Okay. Yeah, that was something I really picked up on, was like just the overwhelming toxic masculinity.
Oh yeah.
That all these characters go through, like the dad telling his kids like, don't cry, don't ever do that, you keep it in. It's like these are teenagers that are having to kill people and you're telling them not to cry.
Yeah. Well, we weren't allowed to cry when we fell off our bikes either.
Mm.
You know? So yeah, American identity was pretty often framed as opposition to communism. It's why it still keeps popping up, you know, even though most right-wing politicians have their mouths wrapped around the member of Vladimir Putin at this point, who is pro-communist, who does want to bring the USSR back, who thinks that communism is spiffy and keen, you know, and they're in the middle of, a fellatio circle that probably looks a lot like the human centipede just at his whim. But it was freedom versus control. It was individualism versus collectivism. It was democracy versus authoritarianism. And so in my head, the modern equivalent to Red Dawn is in the Russian invaders is MAGA.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that's my parallel at this point, is that instead of the Russians and Cubans invading the United States of America, we just went ahead and cut out the middleman, invaded ourselves with a bunch of fascist weirdos, you know, and religious extremists and white supremacists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the call's coming from inside the house.
Yep. But, I mean, it's important to remember, back during that time, this movie was a champion of increased military spending. It was full of strong anti-communist rhetoric. It was a cultural push back towards patriotism and strength. And you can, I mean, the years are different, but I mean, if you compare that to Stallone's First Blood, which you may not like Stallone, and he's not often a very good actor, but in First Blood, you know, we're dealing with the folks back home in America not dealing well with veterans, and that is still a constant as well, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
So that one still had all the toxic masculinity as any other movie at the time, you know, but it didn't glorify America. And at the same time, you know, you look at something like Red Dawn, and suddenly you're paranoid about the military, you're paranoid about national spending, you're worried about national security, and you become emotionally invested in the idea of defending freedom. Because when you think about these MAGA gun nuts and their fetishism for weaponry, this is what they want. They want to be running around in the woods sniping people and blowing up the bad guys. It just, the problem with that is that the bad guys in their minds are people like me now.
Well, yeah, and it's I feel like the movie, it does an okay job of like expressing that they're doing this out of necessity to like defend the homeland.
But yeah.
Now it's just they want to do it because it's fun.
Yeah. Well, and they think that until the first time they have to run away from something or run to something. Because now it's, what is it, Meal Team 6, the Gravy Seals.
Yep.
All right, hit me with your questions, buddy.
Okay, my other question that I had was, like, was the violence seen as, like, shocking at the time? Because, like I said, you know, immediate action, immediate like verse death within 6 minutes, shows a dead kid within the first 10. So just like, was this like shocking at the time, or was this just kind of the norm?
1 year after this movie came out, a little art house film from a gentleman, you know, named Arnold Schwarzenegger called Commando.
Oh, that's so true.
Had 109 people die in 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
109. The Matrix only killed 74 people.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, no. We were not shocked by the violence.
Okay.
And
yeah, I guess considering what came out around that time, yeah, looking back, that's not a surprise.
Well, I mean, generational gaps, when I think about generational gaps, especially with entertainment, Gen X and the millennials, we're pretty separate, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, don't get me wrong. I know there's a lot of millennials that love, you know, certain kinds of movies and TV shows, but I remember very early in my relationship with Tiffany, the first Negan episode came on.
Oh yeah.
And she was in, you know, watching TV with me, and I'm just enjoying the shit out of it. And then, you know, Negan kills, what was his name? Andrew Glenn. And Glenn.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Cause he killed the redheaded dude first.
Abraham.
You know, and I was like, oh, they're going to punt. They're not going to kill Glenn because he's so fucking popular. And then they kill Glenn, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. Tiffany fucking melted down, dude. She was just like, who watches this? Who is this for? What kind of person enjoys this level of violence? Oh, my God, I can't believe this and that and the other. And I'm like, what? It was worse in the comic, babe. She's like, oh my god, yes. Somebody wrote this down. So, you know.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I do remember, I have like distinct memories of growing up playing, what was that? Dead to Rights. You ever play that game?
Yep.
Yep. Growing up, I played Dead to Rights on the PS2 or like Medal of Honor, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. No, I'd say at that time we were pretty okie dokie with heavy violence.
Okay. Yeah, that's totally fair.
Yeah. No, I mean, that was, I remember really the most radical film I saw in the 80s was Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Mm.
Because nobody died.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I still remember that the Large Marge jump scares.
Well, Large Marge was already dead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no, that's...
Well, no, I'm just talking about the jump scare in particular, like how shocking it was. Like the first time I watched that movie, I was not expecting that.
No, what's funny about that is we ended up getting that on VHS because DVDs hadn't been invented yet. And my little brother, who's about 2 years younger than I am, watching the Large Marge jump scare, laughing his ass off the whole time, and then rewinding it and watching it again and again and again. It just tickled him. At no point, even when we saw it for the first time in the theater, was he startled. It just tickled him to no end. And I think one of the reasons why you see over time a lot of Gen X writers and directors doing horror movies,
mm-hmm.
is because we just have no sense of a life without horror.
That's very true. Yeah. My favorite genre for a long time has been horror. And it's just growing up in an age of unwarranted violence.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause there weren't, I mean, there probably were. I just never heard about them. But before Columbine, we didn't really have school shootings.
Mm-hmm.
And you grew up in a world where school shootings were the norm.
Oh, yeah. I've always said where 9/11 changed America on a macro scale, Columbine changed America on a micro scale.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, no, I agree with that 100%.
Like, I, you know, all of high school, all of middle school, there was a resource officer with a gun in the school the entire time. We had active shooter drills. It was just, I still very distinctly remember a lot of them growing up in that kind of time period. And I mean, I can't imagine how much more difficult it got for, like, even my brother, who's, let's see, he's like 5 years younger than me.
Yeah. I mean, we got told about twice a year, you know, we had speed drills to see how fast we could get under our desk so we could kiss our ass goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I was in the fifth or sixth grade, we already knew, the kids already knew there was no surviving a nuclear blast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially where we were in Utah, and that is, you know, we probably wouldn't be blown up with the bomb. What we would get is radiation clouds. But we mm-hmm. knew that that was it. And
yeah.
I think one of the things is I knew, now obviously it didn't happen, but I knew that a nuke was going to fly and that I was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt when I was 10 years old and I was 12 years old that I was going to die at school.
Mm-hmm.
And kids these days get to feel the same fucking thing. And it's obscene. It is.
Yeah, I remember there was an actual like evacuation bomb threat at my school. I remember it very distinctly. We were getting ready to travel with our theater group. We were taking our Shakespeare play to an elementary school to perform it for the kids. We had to go without our costumes, without most of our set because there was a bomb threat. But I remember when that announcement got called, there was a very real moment where it was like, oh, I might die here.
Yeah. That's a hell of a way to make a kid feel.
Oh, yeah.
It is. And I mean, when I was a kid, you can absolutely blame it on politics. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's this subtle feeling we had where we would be called on at any time to defend our country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it. And especially movies like Red Dawn. You know, it fetishized resistance,
mm-hmm.
especially among children, you know, and the messaging that we got at the time is that we had to be vigilant and we had to be strong and we had to be prepared. There's a reason why cleaning out my dad's house, you know, when he died back in January, that there was food storage stuffed and stashed everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were MREs in the garage. There were MREs in his office. I've got 3 72-hour kits actually not 10 feet from me right now because I know how expensive they are and I wasn't about to throw them away. Which, by the way, when you cook freeze-dried food for your family and you don't tell them you pulled it out of a 72-hour kit, they get awful bent.
Food's food.
Yeah. It was chicken stroganoff, and I'm like, oh, I wonder what that tastes like. Hey, I have the technology. All I got to do is boil 4 cups of water, pour this in, put a lid on it, and ignore it for 20 minutes, and it's done.
So yeah, I've eaten a couple MREs. They're not that bad.
Oh no, I love MREs. Mm-hmm. This is the freeze dried weird stuff that you get in the buckets.
Oh, gotcha.
But yeah, no, MREs, there's some I don't like, but there's foods I don't like that aren't MREs as well. I mean, it just happens
mm-hmm.
that I don't much care for anything that has the word Southwest in it. So my palate is Caucasian to the nth degree. It's just, there's nothing I can do about it. I got some, a little bottle of hot sauce to try and temper my mouth and make it so that I could eat it. And now I just have a bottle of hot sauce I'm never going to touch again.
See, I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum. I love hot sauce. Like, I'll put it on pretty much anything that will allow it.
Have you, they still make them, but I don't see them as often as I did when I was a kid, but it was a sort of a spicy ketchup called taco sauce. Came in a little round glass jar.
They still make it, I believe. I've never tried it because I've always just bought either like Tabasco or Crystals. Those
yeah.
go to.
Yeah. My dad had a jar of that in the fridge. And my mom put the fear of God into us about tasting it because it would be so spicy. Ketchup was considered spicy in our house. When I grew up, the thing we ate most often was my mother would take a cheese grater and she would grate some carrots and she would grate some potatoes and then she would cook those at the same time as a pound of ground beef.
Mm.
Now, there's something missing from this story. See if you can suss it out. And then once the meat was done, it would get piled on our plate for us to eat. A vegetable, mm-hmm. a starch, and a protein. Did you hear what was missing?
Any seasoning?
Any seasoning at all. And if you, by God, had the audacity to salt and pepper something, you were insulting the chef. And it's like, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I love my mom. We get along great. I think the world of her. She's fantastic. She accidentally taught me that cooking a turkey upside down is actually the best way to do it,
mm-hmm.
because she didn't know which end of the bird was the top when she made it. Which, by the way, cooking them breast side down, best fucking turkey I've ever had in my life.
Oh,
was,
yeah.
Was the, made by a lady who was
slow down.
Yeah, who was afraid of salt. So, I mean, you know, what are you going to do? So what was your thing about the Wolverines?
Okay, so I had never seen Red Dawn before last night. But I have played the game Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2.
Okay.
The sixth mission in Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 is called Wolverines. And it takes place in northeastern Virginia,
okay.
where Russians have breached U.S. air defense and they are paratrooping into American soil. And you play as a U.S. Army Ranger, and your job is to go secure. I believe it's you're looking for a high value target in the mission. But I didn't get that was a reference until I watched it last night, because I believe it's the name of like the APC that you have to follow in that mission is called the Wolverine.
Okay.
But that yeah, it like was, fun. It was very interesting to see that and see the influence of that movie just throughout media, especially as when did Modern Warfare 2 come out? Like, I think it was like 2013.
Hmm.
Oh, I was way off. 2009.
Okay.
But yeah, that was my very interesting to me, my little aha moment.
Yeah, it's my friends and I, when to this day, in our old age, in our dotage, as we are so near to retirement, so close to death and far from birth, we will still, upon acts of manliness, call out Wolverines.
This, I think that was my favorite part of the movie, was seeing the kid like blow up an APC and then stand up with the AK above his head and yell Wolverines.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like a Tusken warrior standing mm-hmm. over Luke Skywalker.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Yep. No, that was fun. That was fun. 1984.
Yeah, 1984. Great movie. Really, really enjoyed it.
We're going to hit 1984 quite a lot with my childhood picks, by the way. But
that's very fair. I think we'll be hitting early 2000s with a lot of mine.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of figured that. I'm just, of the 80s, 84, there was a lot going on in 84.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good news hit, too. But, yeah, I am out of analysis for Red Dawn at this point.
Other than we went through all my notes. I think the only other note I had was on the radio, the chair is against the wall, John has a long mustache. I didn't understand what that meant. I had to look that up.
Yeah, we used to do that in World War II.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was just gibberish, and then from time to time, the person doing the radio voice would sneak in a code.
Mm.
And that's what that was.
Yeah, yeah, because when I looked it up, it basically just said that it was signaling that U.S. was under attack.
Yep. Yep, that is a nod to the history of stuff that we did. It's where Air America, that was the CIA in the 60s. Radio Free Europe.
Mm.
You know, that was us. We did that.
Looking that up right now.
Yep. That was an OSS thing from World War II.
Oh. That's very, very cool. I'm very interested in like spy stuff, so that's cool.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, for spy stuff, the 50s and the 40s had some fun stuff, but the 50s and 60s, the shit that the CIA was getting up to, the shit the FBI was getting up to, I mean, it's nuts. If I ever unpack my storage unit, I have a whole couple of shelves full of really cool spy histories.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, because it was just kind of like, those agencies were like in their infancy, and so it was just kind of the Wild West. Just, if you got the money, whatever you say goes.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why Latin America is so fucked up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Our fault.
Yep.
Our bad.
Oopsie. Sorry about that.
One more regime change, guys. I promise this one will work this time.
Yeah, it's just every time somebody gets mad at immigrants running away from war-torn, impoverished nations, it's like, we made that. We kind of owe them.
It's the least we could do for ruining their country.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fucking nuts.
Yeah, it's... One of the memories for me was in the pulling out of Iraq and Afghanistan, and then from fighting the Taliban, and then ISIS is here because we made a power vacuum and then said, see ya, have fun.
Again. You know, just again and again and again. We never learn any fucking lessons. America is touched. We're touched.
Oh, yes. Very, yeah. Greatest country in the world that never learns from its history.
Yep. All right. You know what? I think that's a good place to stop this week, buddy.
I think so too.
All right.
This was great. I went through all my notes, so I'm good.
And I did. And I now have, I got to go and get a copy of volume 2 of Department of Truth.
Oh, I think I have all of them. I'll just lend them to you.
Okay. I think that would be great.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Well, thank you very much. If you're up for it, I will see you next week.
I'll see you next week. I'm having a great time with this.
All right, me too, buddy. Have a good one.